Hey, it's Francis Lam, and this is Splendid Table Selects, our mini podcast about the stuff that makes us better cooks and eaters. If you're into wine, you've probably heard about natural wine, and possibly from someone who just cannot stop talking about it until everyone leaves the room. And that's too bad, because natural wine has a reputation for creating cult-like followers who end up turning people off to it. But the reality of natural wine is really pretty simple. It's just wine made with nothing added, nothing taken away. Which is basically the way wine was made from forever ago until the 80s, when wine additives became standard. And the results are wines that, you can argue, are a little wilder, a little more unexpected, and that have their own personalities. And there are lots of people passionate about these wines who are as fascinating themselves as natural wines are to them. Alice Firing is one of them. She's a little famous for having a bathtub in her kitchen, which she turns into the world's biggest wine ice bucket. But she's more famous for her 7 books, and her latest is called Natural Wine for the People. Our contributor Melissa Clark talked with her in New York. Here's the conversation.
So Alice, you write about natural wine. Isn't all wine natural wine? What makes a wine natural?
Most wine is not natural. There are 72 perfectly legal additives that find their way into winemaking quite often. And it's an astounding number. So
72.
Once you start adding all those additives, or at least 10 of them will go into most of the wines that are available, then for me, you're really in territory of not particularly natural.
I didn't realize there were that many additives.
It's kind of crazy. They are added yeast, enzymes, bacteria, tannins, anti-foaming agents, of course, sulfur dioxide, which is probably the most common, and even in tiny amounts allowed in natural wine. And they go on and on. Some are nasty chemicals, and some are nutrients, uric acid, things like that.
And so a natural wine is a wine that doesn't have any of those things?
Grapes.
Just grapes?
Grapes and up to maybe 20 or 30 parts per million of added sulfite. But if you know that a legal amount is 270 part per million, you get an idea of the difference.
And how does a natural wine differ in flavor and aroma?
It is alive. It's surprising. And okay, what does an alive wine mean? It means that every sip is going to taste a little bit different from the one beforehand. It's not fixed in place. So most conventional producers really want the wine to taste the same every vintage. And all of those additives help the winemaker and the company create a wine that's going to be consistent year to year. And that is why that is going to be very different from a natural wine.
You were one of the first American wine writers to write about natural wines. How'd you discover them?
Back in 2000, I had a red wine book, and I was doing a lot of tasting. And I was thinking, there's something going on here in the wine world that I don't particularly like. A lot of the wines started tasting absolutely the same and not at all the way I remembered them. So I started to make a list of the wines that I really did like, and I went to visit, found out what was the difference and what were the similarities, and they were all from organic viticulture, and they're all made from grape.
So what are some of your favorite wines that are relatively easy to find across the country?
That is such a tough one because these wines are usually made in very small amounts. There are a few that probably make more than 2,000 cases that maybe you can find. Go to regions that have huge concentrations of natural winemakers. So in France, we're talking the Loire, we're talking Beaujolais, we're talking the Jura. In also the southwest of France in Languedoc. Then you go into Catalonia in Spain. The country of Georgia have a great concentration of small natural winemakers. In the United States, you might have a little bit more success with actually the producer. And some of those people to look for are La Clarine Farm, Deirdre Heekin from Vermont, Lo-Fi Wines, Le Lunas Wines, and Katori. You might have good success with those.
Natural wine is this huge trend. At least I know in some of the big cities, you know, I knew in New York, in San Francisco, in Chicago, there are a lot of places specializing in natural wines.
So it is kind of the little engine that could. Its footprint is really small. It's maybe 1% of all wines being made, but the impact it has had on the industry is huge. Basically, natural wine is merely a return to the way wine used to be made. So what we're seeing in a lot of regions like Burgundy, even Bordeaux, the United States, Spain, is a return to old-fashioned sanity, a return to organic viticulture. People are rethinking, going back to using native yeast fermentation and recalibrating back to a kinder, gentler time in wine and seeing that they don't have to manipulate the wine quite so much.
So this is starting with the producers.
Yes.
And the producers are saying, okay, we tried conventional winemaking techniques using all these additives. And you know what? We're going to go back to just doing it with just grapes.
Right. Back in the 70s and the 80s, there were salespeople coming around to winemakers saying, you need to use yeast to start fermentation. You need to use bacteria. You need to add oak chips into your wine if you're going to get color. They were taught in school that they need these additives when their grandfathers didn't. And some of the wines that are most collectible were made by those grandfathers. So right now it really is a reset for the industry. So whether every wine has to be perfectly natural, maybe not. But we are going to come back to a period of time when wine is just wine, whether it's natural or not. They will all be measured by the same yardstick.
So, you know, you have sort of this corporate interest trying to get people to buy these products to create a very shelf-stable mm-hmm. wine. Mm-hmm. And that's what winemakers right now are rebelling against.
Well, the natural winemakers really were the rebellious ones. And the other ones, maybe it's the second generation, the winemaker's kids are like, huh, maybe we don't need this. And so they're trying to find the middle ground. Let's go back to our grandfather's way of making wine.
Alice, thanks so much for talking with us today.
It's been great. Thanks for having me.
That was our contributor, Melissa Clark, with wine writer Alice Feiring, author of Natural Wine for the People. For more information about Alice, her book, and her natural wine picks, go to splendidtable.org. And hey, I am happy to tell you about our new podcast featuring Melissa Clark, who you just heard. She's, of course, our dear friend, but also a cookbook author and a New York Times food writer. The podcast is called Weeknight Kitchen with Melissa Clark, and it's a practical guide for everyday cooking and eating. Here's a preview.
Hey, it's Melissa Clark. I'm a food writer for the New York Times, which means my job is to think and write about food all of the time. But I'm going to confess, sometimes when I'm done working,
what is in the fridge?
I got nothing. No ideas, no gourmet feast, just an empty fridge and a mostly empty stomach. Because weeknights, let's just admit it, weeknights are hard. We're tired. But we still need something solid, yet really tasty, to get us through. And that's the idea behind my new podcast, Weeknight Kitchen. Every week, you're going to join me in my kitchen, and we're going to work our way through one really simple and delicious recipe to get great food on your table on a weeknight. And since this is pretty much the appetizer to the full show, I'm going to start right now with a recipe that's going to make your summer. It's tomato season, and in my family, myself, my husband, my daughter, we eat some version of tomato salad every night because we can. And this recipe takes tomato salad, it takes it beyond the typical mozzarella, basil, tomato. And it's so easy. Okay, this is what you do. You mix up a dressing, a really simple combination of lime juice, brown sugar, scallions if you've got them, and you take a big clove of garlic, mince it up, some hot chili like a jalapeno, and then you add the magic ingredient. And stay with me on this one, fish sauce. Now, it's not fishy. Fish sauce is just umami. It's deep. It's rich. And you sprinkle a little bit of that into your dressing, and it transforms the whole thing. Whisk it together, drizzle it on your sliced tomatoes, top it with some herbs, and then let it sit for a little bit. You know, mix it up right before dinner and then eat it at the end of the meal so it's had time to marinate and all those flavors really get into those sweet tomatoes. This is going to make even your so-so, not-so-great tomatoes taste amazing. Try it. It's pretty great. And you can find that recipe right now at splendidtable.org. The whole show, Weeknight Kitchen, launches on September 4th. And every week, you'll be able to get the recipe, details on ingredients and equipment, and more. And you can subscribe at splendidtable.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's The Splendid Table's new podcast, Weeknight Kitchen with Melissa Clark. It's coming to your favorite podcast app on September 4th, so go subscribe. Thanks for listening to Splendid Table Selects. I'm Francis Lamb.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.